Welcome everyone to the Friends That Carry On podcast, where we dive deeper into our trips, unpack tips, and everything in between. Now sit back, relax, and get ready to go on a trip with your favourite group of friends.
Hello and welcome to the Friends That Carry On podcast. We are a group of friends who like to travel the world and share our adventures and hopefully inspire others to travel as well. It started out with a group going around and we try to create FOMO within our friends to get them to come on the trip, and it's grown from there. So hopefully we can inspire, also give travel tips, and then do interviews with other world travelers to get share their experiences as well. Today, we are very excited to have a world traveler on a top-notch class. We've got the amateur traveler, Chris Christensen, who is an award-winning travel blogger with multiple podcasts. And at least by my rankings, whenever I search Google and all, he always comes up as one of the top two or three, sometimes first in most cases. And from what I understand, he is in the top 5% of all podcasts, regardless of genre, so not just travel podcasts. So welcome, Chris. We are really happy to have you on today.
Well, thanks. Of course, we have to put that in perspective. You know, when we talk about being the top 5% of podcasts, remember the average number of downloads per an episode for a podcast is less than 200. So there's a lot of podcasts that, you know, don't get a lot of listens, and I've been there. So
yeah. Well, now that's, but either way, it's there's a ton of choices out there, as we know, as podcasters. So finding a voice and being heard is a good thing, and obviously you've done that. So congratulations on that. Now it says you're an award winning blogger and podcast. What
technically I'm an award winning podcaster.
Gotcha.
I don't remember whether I've won any awards for the blog or not.
Gotcha. But, so how does a podcaster win an award, and who's giving them?
So there's a variety of things. There are podcast awards that happen annually. There is no longer a travel category in the podcast awards.
Interesting.
Because Lou Mongello from WDW Radio won every year, beating me every year. And finally, they retired Lou. And I thought, great, I have a chance. And then they got rid of the whole category. So so I haven't won those. But I've been nominated yet, I don't know, until 10, 12 times or something like that, as long as they had them. But no, I've won a couple national NACHA awards, a National Association of Travel Journalists of America or something like that. No, there's the AAS Association, and also a Lowell Thomas Award from the Society of American Travel Writers, and then in the Smitty Awards, which is a awards done by Travel and Leisure Magazine. Way back in 2014, they named me the best independent travel journalist for the podcast.
Nice. So
that was across genres in travel.
Nice. Well, that's congratulations on those. It's certainly well earned. With the Amateur Traveler, you've got over 716 episodes, so that's a lot of content there.
just a bit.
Yeah. So wouldn't that make you a professional now, not an amateur?
Well, let's talk about our definitions. All what right. does amateur mean from the Latin?
Okay. Uh-oh.
Okay. I don't know Latin.
Amas, amore, amateur, all the same root words, to do something for the love of it.
Nice.
Which, yep. You know, people say, aren't you an amateur? Are you still an amateur? So they say, well, if I don't love it, I wouldn't do it. And that also in terms of, you know, the other thing we think of is making a living at it. And I don't make a living at it. So in both definitions, no, still an amateur. So remember that the Titanic was built by professional and the Ark by an amateur. Right.
That's a very good point.
That is a very good point. So you're just an experienced amateur.
I'm an experienced amateur.
There we go.
That's true. That's correct.
Well, that's awesome. And then you got another, and I might have the number wrong, 263 episodes with This Week in Travel. So you're talking travel quite a bit.
Yeah, actually, I had a third travel podcast, which is on hiatus, which was the Passport Travel Marketing and PR podcast, and then also have a infrequent video show, plus another non-travel podcast. So I've done, about 1,700 episodes of podcasts. So
wow. That's
over 15 years, amateur travelers. Turned 15 at the beginning of last month.
Wow, well, happy birthday or happy anniversary. I'm not
yeah,
sure
well,
which
thank
which
you.
One
thank
is.
You.
Yeah. So with that being said, how did all this start? How did the amateur traveler start putting the word out on your adventures?
Well, so podcasting itself started just a little short of 16 years ago. It started actually in September of 2004. If I've got the date right, the very first thing that went out and was called a podcast, which was an audio show that was tied to an RSS feed. And I started listening not that long after that because I was listening to tech podcasts or tech TV, and it got canceled. And some of the hosts, like Leo Laporte, kept doing what they called a podcast. I didn't know what it was. And so I started listening to podcasts within the first year of podcasting. And I loved the genre. I loved the idea of having these very niche shows about things you'd never find on TV. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, you know, a TV channel had just failed that I liked with that kind of content that was more like I was looking for. And so I was binging podcasts way back in the spring of 2005 and thought I've got to do my own show. And, you know, thought about doing a religious show and thought about doing a tech show. And then we had some friends over for a Memorial Day picnic in 2005, and all the best stories that people were telling were travel stories. And I went, that's it. I'm going to do a show about my travels, which is what an amateur traveler was going to be and was for the first, I don't know, 10 episodes or something like that, which was a bad idea because I was traveling 4 weeks a year and podcasting 48 weeks a year. And if you do that math,
right,
you don't end up with 15 years of episodes. So, you know, pretty soon I started inviting friends on who had been someplace, who had gone someplace interesting. I found that I really enjoyed hearing about their travels, and that was a great way for me to travel vicariously through them, because I definitely wasn't traveling as much in those days as I have since. And it's predominantly turned into an interview show. Mm-hmm. We will talk about my travels when, you know, when I get out of the house, but not so much this year.
Yeah, right.
Well, what a great way to kind of think about and plan your next trip, interviewing people that have been places you haven't.
Oh, yeah. Well, people listen to the show and do that. They'll take mm-hmm. things and put aside a show for their, you know, for their bucket list or for their travels. And I've done the same. You know, I have done some shows. In fact, next weekend, I'm heading up to Lassen National Park, which we've done a show on, and I just re-listened to that show to try and figure out what we should do up there. I've been there once when I was five.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, we're traveling kind of in California these days because we don't really want to get on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, basically my list of places that I want to go has only increased by doing the show.
Oh,
well, there's a few, you know, that I listen to and go, yeah, no, I'm not going there.
Right. That's what we noticed, too. It's your eyes get open to so many places that you never even in a million years would have considered, haven't even heard of. And people
oh, yeah.
tell these, you know, amazing stories, and we're like, all right, I got to go there.
Right.
Yeah. My favorite emails I get are the people who say, we'd never even heard of Namibia until we mm-hmm. listened to your show, and we just honeymooned there. So, you know, that's wow. the kind of thing that's
putting
and that one I haven't been to. So that one's on my list. So.
Yeah. That's putting a lot of trust in you, Chris. Boy, yeah. the pressure. We're going to honeymoon where you suggested to go.
Possibly way too much. Possibly way too much.
Come back.
Well, I love the lady who said, I didn't know where to go in Europe, so we downloaded 50 episodes of your show, and we're listing through them.
Wow.
And if you look at word counts, an amateur traveler episode is 7,000 to 10,000 words, something like that. And so 50 episodes is about 4.5 Harry Potter books.
Crazy. Did she let you know what she ended up deciding?
She did not. No, she didn't. She did not write back and say, and we ended up in X or whatever. But
yeah, that's like almost having too many choices again.
Oh,
I listened to 50
yeah.
different episodes, but like, I still don't know where I want to go. I want to go to all of them.
But I think you find that when you – so I think of early on in the show, 2 years in or something like that, I interviewed Zora O'Neill, and we talked about the Yucatan. I'd never been there. I didn't even know if I'd been to Mexico outside of volunteer trips to Tijuana at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And she painted the picture of the Rutupuk which is, you know, not Chichen Itza that everybody's heard of, but it's these lesser known Mayan ruins in the Yucatan on this little tiny road, including this cave with 10,000-year-old cave art. And as soon as I heard that episode, it was on my list. You know, I had to get there. And it took, I don't know how many years until we got there. But we drove the route of Puuc. We went in the cave with 10,000-year-old cave art. You know, you see these handprints on the walls that were done by people 10,000 years ago. We climbed the pyramid at some of the Mayan ruins there. It was fascinating. We went on Merida to the Sunday as Zora recommended, and when there's dancing in the plaza, and ate $1 street tacos, and it was fabulous.
That's
it was
awesome.
A great trip.
Yeah, that's really cool. We I got to do some snorkeling in some of the cenotes down there off the Yucatan, and there was one of the little places that you had to go under. Some people were a little nervous to do that because you had to swim for about 20 feet in the cave to come up into a room, but it was similar. They had some old art from back in the day, because apparently that wasn't underwater back then. So it was kind of wild, but that was one of those unique things that you just never imagine you're going to do. And next thing you know, you're swimming in caves from a civilization from hundreds and hundreds of years ago. So it's kind of wild.
Exactly.
Now, I see you also have... you plan trips for people or take small group trips. I guess first, how did that come about? And then...
So I do once a year a trip with listeners of The Amateur Traveler. And we started that... Well, I started it in 2010. I did the first trip to Egypt. And when you say plan trips, I think that's probably a little generous because we've used, you know, predefined trips. That first trip, we were part of a larger trip. Which I don't think I'd probably do again. It was a bus tour to the major Egyptian ruins. Great trip, but I wouldn't do it with that many people again. And then since then, we've done small group trips. We've actually worked with Intrepid and done a number of their pre-programmed trips, I think, for most of the trips we've done. The exception would be we did it. So for there, we've done Cambodia, Morocco, Southern Africa, China I did with family, India, and then we were going to go to Turkey this year, and then we've done another trip that was Central Europe that was that one was much more custom, and that was Prague and Krakow and Budapest with a group of listeners to show. And
how many people do you usually put?
Hanging out with those people who listen to the show.
People do you usually have on those trips?
I think the largest was 14 and the smallest was 6. That's counting me.
How is the decision made for which of your listeners go with you on the trip?
So the decision of who goes is who signs up first. In terms of where to go, well, the smarter thing that I've been doing recently is we've been voting on where to go. And so this year, we voted to go to Turkey, Eastern Turkey. That trip has been postponed to next year. And then for next year, we had voted to go to the Stans, to a trip to Central Asia. Mm-hmm. And that trip will happen in 2022. And so I found that, you know, when you ask people where they want to go and you take the top thing, then more people sign up, oddly enough.
Now, the voting, was that after people signed up or your general listener population voted and then you set up the trip and had people sign up?
Well, so there's a group of listeners of the podcast who have joined a private Facebook group at amateurtraveler.com/trips.
Gotcha.
And you have to be in the private Facebook group. You know, anybody who says they're interested, I let in. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's been any exceptions to that so far, but you know, if you've heard of it, you're probably in the community. And so within that group, then we'll do a couple different rounds. I think the first round is anybody can name anything, and I pick out a bunch of different trips that sound interesting to me or that we've talked about. And then we take that group, vote on it for a few weeks, and then narrow it down to a smaller list of, you know, maybe 5 trips or something like that, so that we, you know, basically say, okay, I'm looking at these, here's a rough idea of what we would do, here's a, you know, a trip, for instance, that would might do this particular trip. And well, this trip is offered from Intrepid, but it's a trip for youth only. So I'm going to change that a little. I'm going to upgrade it to one more level of comfort, not luxury, but, you know, not sleeping in hostels or something like that. So, you know, it's a couple more $100 than this, but we'd go these sort of places and then, you know, vote.
Yeah. Do you find yourself leaning towards trips to locations where you have been to provide a little bit extra knowledge or go with the something new to explore?
No, most of the places we have gone have been new for me, and I've definitely been leaning toward places I haven't been. Turkey is really, I think, the first exception for that, where I really wanted to get my wife back to Turkey because she didn't come with me when I went. And actually Southern Africa was similar that way. I had been to Botswana, for instance, on a safari in 2018. And then I really wanted to get her back to what turned out to be a very different experience, a road trip across Southern Africa from Johannesburg up to Victoria Falls.
Oh, wow.
And I hadn't been to Victoria Falls, but I had been on safari a couple times in Southern Africa and Eastern Africa. But this was, you know, a very different thing than what I had done. But it was great fun. And that one, in fact, the reason why we did six is, you know, usually I'm doing it where anybody can book a group trip, as you guys know. And if you bring enough people along, you'll get a discount. And you can, you know, even get a group of your friends and you go for free because you brought seven friends or things like that. It's six friends, you know, six of you total, you don't get that, right? Six of you, you're like, okay, we're going to have to, this is going to cost a little more than I thought, but I really wanted to get my wife there and she was willing to go. It's like, she's willing to go camping. That happens very, very rarely. This is the first camping trip I've got her on since our son was a baby and he is over 30. So,
yeah. And I assume this isn't glamping. It's regular camping.
This was not glamping. This was pitching your own tent. Somebody else was doing the cooking. You know, you're traveling in a van with five other people, across Africa, three countries. But it was great fun. Wonderful group of, you know, small group of listeners, but just great people. We had a terrific time.
That sounds interesting.
You know, saw not just animals and safari, but also saw villages and talked to people. And it was good fun. It was a really good trip.
No, it sounds like it. Sounds great. Now, with Intrepid, do you contact them and say, hey, I want to do Southern Africa, and then name the towns or countries you want to go through, and then they set it up? Or do they already have a pre-done
package? We could potentially do that, but no, we've been usually using something that they have already put together. They've already done all the trip research. They've priced it. Again, with that one, I think like one of the other ones, I've chosen a trip that I couldn't do normally because they offer it only for young groups or something like that. But if you're doing something independently with them, there's a few more options.
Gotcha.
I probably could customize some of those, but you know, sometimes they've got something that's really ideal for what I'm looking for. And so for instance, the trip we're going to do in Turkey next year is their standard trip. The only difference is that I'm really telling people, you know, come in a day early or 2 days early and I'll be your tour guide in Istanbul because I've been there and love the city. One of my favorite cities in the world. And so, you know, we maybe we'll do some day tours with they have a branch that does day tours as well. And so maybe we'll arrange something. So I've talked to them about, you know, hey, we'll talk about you on the show if you'll do a day tour for my listeners as they come in. But, you know, I'd love to see that. And that's not really covered that much on the standard tour they have. But you can't go to Turkey and not spend some time in Istanbul, especially I'm a history buff. So, you know, talk about a city with rich history. You can still walk the walls that the Romans built. So
that's crazy.
Yeah, that's neat. That's real neat.
I love locations like that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Now, I was watching. This is way off the topic, but some Netflix show the other night, and I don't even know what the reason was, but they brought up Istanbul. But the lady who was eating, they were at a Turkish restaurant here in the U.S.
Sure.
And the lady called it Constantinople. And then and I
you
think
don't do that.
Well, yeah, but I think the premise was this lady. This was some supernatural or superhero type film, and she had, I guess, lived then, so that's why she was calling
it
that. But yeah, but the guy at the restaurant, the waiter, I mean, he instantly said, "No, that's not," you know, went into why they don't say that anymore,
right.
and everything else. So it was just interesting. Now, you mentioned the Stans trip. That one piqued my interest. We had the Global Gaz, Rick Garzayan, on, I don't know, a few months ago.
Yeah. No, Rick.
And he brought up going through Central Asia like that. And I just, hearing about some of those places, it's one of those things. It's not that I didn't know they were there, but hearing some of the great places to go was really piqued my interest. And then you bringing that up did the same thing. So I might have to check into that if that's not a full trip.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you guys decided where you're going yet in the Stans?
Yeah. It's predominantly Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and Kyrgyzstan, I want to say. I've picked the trip, but I'm just trying to remember. For instance, we just did an episode on Turkmenistan, and I know we're not going to Turkmenistan. So Turkmenistan gets like 7,000 visitors a year. So we just did a fascinating episode on that. And, you know, especially as a history buff, you know, going back to the Parthians and the Persians and, you know, that kind of culture in the region and, you know, going to huge flaming tar lakes and things like that that you can find only there and in Azerbaijan across the Caspian Sea from there.
Yeah, would
be fascinating, but I know we're not covering that on this trip.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely an area that I had never ever considered, honestly. I don't know why. It's just one of those things that felt like it was in the middle of nowhere, but
we did an really episode 10 years ago, 12 years ago, quite a long time ago, with a couple that biked across the state. Well, we did two episodes. First, we did an episode where they biked across Iran, which is something that I would not be able to do as an American because I would have to be in a group trip to travel to Iran, but they were Canadian. And I wanted to go to Iran since then. Just, you know, not just the history and the culture, you know, going to cities that were built by the ancient Babylonians and things like that, but also because of the stories that they told of the kindness of the people. And one of my favorite stories ever for an amateur traveler, they're biking through, they stop at a payphone, and the payphones are notoriously unreliable. And they're trying to call ahead to the Stans to get their visas for that. And somebody stops in a car and says, you know, the phones don't work that well. Do you want to use my cell phone? And then somebody else stops, and then somebody else stops, then somebody else stops. They have five. They showed me a picture of five people on five different cell phones calling five different embassies for them to help them out their visas, just because, you know, they're strangers and it was something you do. And they were biking up a hill one day out in the country, and somebody followed them slowly for an hour just to make sure that they got over the hill safely. And as soon as they crested the hill, he beeped and waved and went on his way. But he just wanted to make sure they're okay.
Wow.
Yeah, that's nice. That's hospitality.
You don't see that too often.
Yeah, here somebody follows you for an hour. You're going to be a little nervous.
Yeah, you better run.
You're using the cell phone to call the police.
You know, they're blowing the horns to get the hell out of the way.
Yeah. So, but then they came back on the show and talked about biking through the Stans, and I've been wanting to go since then.
Yeah, well, one of the things that stood out when, and you kind of mentioned it just now, when we interviewed Rick, was he kind of compared it to Cambodia was maybe 8-10 years ago, where they weren't getting that many tourists, and so a lot of things were kind of still very much in their natural state. It hadn't become commercialized and so forth.
Right.
And we just went to Cambodia back in January. So it's
great.
So
I think I heard you talk about that on a recent show. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're so happy we got that trip in before all this craziness hit.
Oh, yeah.
We kind of think they started it in the U.S.
Yeah.
Jim's patient zero.
we won't talk about that in any kind of detail, but that possibility exists. Rick was saying Cambodia in the Stans is that especially, was it, I'm going to butcher the name,
Kazakhstan,
yeah, that up till a couple years ago when the president switched, or they switched presidents, they were anti-tourists and just didn't bring them in, but the new guy really is bringing it in, so they're open to it, so they've made it easier to get visas, get in there, and do everything, but everything, it's not commercialized yet just because it's new to them, so that just seems like a fresh look at a lot of great history.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were talking on the show that we did recently on Turkmenistan, for instance, that in the time of the Mongol hordes, so you know, going back to the, what are you in the 1300s at that point, the fourth largest city or one of the largest cities in the world was in Turkmenistan, because that's the Silk Road. That's the trading route that happened, you know, connected east to west until that time. It was completely destroyed at that point. And it's one of the places that you can visit. But, you know, one of the trips that I still is on my list to do is the Silk Road end to end. You know, and that's a 2-month trip or something like that. But
that would be wild.
That would be something I would really enjoy doing as really a, you know, as a history buff, basically in the steps of Marco Polo sort of thing.
The Marco Polo trip.
Yeah, that'd be epic.
Yeah. The talking about your bucket list trips that you had on there, one of the things we obviously just did an episode a few weeks ago, kind of like on bucket lists.
And right, sure.
What was interesting is how it's changed once you start to travel. Like when before I ever traveled, we talked about, you know, just the thought of even going to Paris seemed crazy to me. And then now it's the things that kind of get on that list are really wild. So for you, how do you feel?
I mean, that's not a bad idea, though. I mean, your first trip, London and Paris,
right?
You know, some of my first trips out of the country are pretty good starter place.
They are great.
And, you know, you don't necessarily, I do know people who their first trip was Zimbabwe or their first trip was India. And I think,
wow.
You really jumped into the deep end. For most of us, you know, London, you know, hey, they speak my language.
Right.
They drive on the side of the road. So I'll, you know, I won't drive necessarily on my first trip, but it's a great place to start.
Yeah. So for you though, how did you start your original kind of traveling? And then when did it really start to, I guess, exceed what you expected as far as the volume of and places you were going?
So when I graduated college, I had been to the US and Canada. You know, to Eastern Canada, to Alberta and British Columbia. That's really the only places I had been outside the U.S.
Okay.
And by the time my son was born 30 years ago, I had been to 6 European countries on one whirlwind trip. And then, you know, before his sister was born, we went to London. And then we really didn't travel a lot internationally until our kids were about 10-ish,
okay,
about 9 or 10. So really a lot of my travel has been in the last 20 years. And then we started doing, you know, one international trip in the summer, you know, so this trip would be pickup. Well, I had a roommate from college, for instance, who had moved to Paris for a postdoc. And so our trip to Europe just before my son was born, you know, it turned out to be a year before he was born, but we didn't know that at the time, was because I knew somebody in Paris. And so he said, you know, come visit me in Paris. And so we said, okay. And while we're there, let's go see some other things. So another friend from college and the two of us, my wife and I actually met in college also, you know, met him in Paris and then traveled around and did 6 countries or something like that in a week or 2 weeks, maybe it was. But, and then actually one of our next trips to Europe was, he said, I'm celebrating my 40th birthday. I want to do it at a villa in Tuscany. Would you join me? So, you know, that was, another trip. And we went on a trip with some friends who she worked for an airline, and would we like to travel with them to London and Paris? And, you know, it sort of started by adding one more country, you know, then it was, then it was Spain, and then it was 9/11. And so we didn't travel to Europe for a little while, for a couple of years. We traveled up to Canada and Australia to see an uncle who I had who moved to Australia. You know, started adding on kind of one country a year for a while. When I started Amateur Traveler, I think I had been to 10 countries. I don't think I had been, you know, I've been to 60 some. I've been to more countries than I have years of age. And I had not done that until a few years ago. Maybe 2 years ago. I've been to a lot of the U.S. I'd probably been to 35 states or something like that when we started that, because I'd done a lot of travel as a kid, but domestically. And so a lot of the things that I have done since, and many of them have been trips that have been afforded to me because of Amateur Traveler, that I've, you know, had sponsoring trips that have come about through that. But we still are buying our own travel for a lot of trips, and or, you know, buying the plane ticket to Africa and somebody offers me a safari, something like that. Okay, you know,
right.
That's a good deal. So,
right.
So, you know, now I have not been to Antarctica, but I've been to the other continents. But a lot of those trips have been afforded to me because of, you know, the tourism board for Jordan calling up and saying, would you like to come to Jordan for 10 days? Mm-hmm. We'll provide, you know, the airplane ticket, the guide and the driver. So those are, you know, wonderful opportunities when you get them.
Yeah.
And then obviously just keep adding on to that, because the more places you go, like you were saying, you know, the more places you know about, the more places you want to go. You know, I haven't even been, you talk about going to Paris, love it. Haven't even been to all the places in France I want to go, right? We just got to one of the places I've been wanting to go for, I don't know how many years, Carcassonne, down in southern France, mm-hmm. which is an old, well-preserved, walled city that was destroyed actually in an internal crusade. The Abyssinian Crusade, I want to say, way back in the Middle Ages, because there was a heresy that was coming out of that particular region. And so we had a chance to see it just last year. I think it was, yeah, last year, went down there, got to Normandy for the first time last year. So, you know, partially it's getting to new countries, partially it's filling in the map because you find out that, oh, there's that place over there that I've never been to.
Right.
Lots of places I haven't been to in the countries I've been to. So there's a lot of places I would like to get to still.
That's one of the things when we go on our trips, we try to pack in a lot of stuff. Like if we're in Paris, a day trip to Normandy and that type of stuff. But one of the things we realize is we're worn out because we're going, you know, 90 miles an hour right. to get in as much as possible.
Sure, yeah.
And then every once in a while, we're like, well, can we just go someplace and not do anything? Like we
well,
went
to... and I think one of the things to enjoy your trip, sometimes you have to assume you're going to be able to get back. And it may or may not be true. But
that's kind of the new rule. Just assume you're coming back.
So I mentioned, you know, we were doing one new country a year or something like that. One of them was Spain. And we still talk about that because Spain is the country that after we went there, we came up with the 2-night minimum rule because we went to Spain for 10 days and I think it was 10 days. And we did Madrid, Toledo, Sevilla, Los Pueblos Blancos, Granada, Cordoba, Barcelona, Segovia, and Avila.
Wow.
In 10 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's
a lot.
Too much. And, you know, honestly, for me, it wasn't too much. But for my travel companions, who were my family and a traveling friend who we've traveled with for, I think, six continents. I've been to all the same number of continents I've been to with her. But they were just worn out. And we went in summer. So, you know, down in Andalusia, it's 104 or, you know, 42, depending on your system, mm-hmm. but it's hot.
It's hot.
And I can do that speed. I can do that speed and enjoy it. But usually now when I'm traveling with my family or traveling with my wife, I go to about 50% of my speed. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, we're going to enjoy a few more meals. We're going to, you know, see less, but enjoy it more.
Yeah. Well, question for you. Travel, when I first started, it was one of those things. I hadn't been to Europe, similar to like you had said.
Sure, yeah.
And all of a sudden, it was my 40th birthday, and I was like, you know what? I'm making it happen this year. This is happening. So that was that first big trip. And coming back, I said, or when on the way over there, I was saying, one or two things are going to happen. I'm either really going to fall in love with doing this, and it's going to be an addiction, or I'm probably going to go, it's okay. I don't need to go back again.
Sure, yeah.
We came back saying, all right, we're going to try to make a major trip every other year. Well, that's turned into about three per year. So
right.
It's one of those things that there's a lot of reasons why I travel. But for you, what's one of the biggest things that drives your desire to travel and explore the world?
So I'm a nerd. Let's just put this on the table here. both by avocation, I'm a tech guy, but also just a nerd about a lot of things. I mentioned history, for instance, and I also love to take photographs. So it tends to be the photography or yet, and not that I'm, you know, the world's class photographers, because I know those guys now.
Right.
Yeah, their photos are better. But also, I just love learning stuff. And there's nothing that forces you in many ways to learn things than travel does. You know, mm-hmm. when you're standing in, I remember vividly standing in Prague at the machine to get a ticket from the subway, and it was all in Czech. Then I don't speak, yeah, you know, I speak a word of Czech. That's right. That's about it. I can say thank you, right. You know, and then I'm out. And, you know, when you solve that puzzle and you get your subway ticket, there's this sense of accomplishment. Mm-hmm. There's this sense of I can do this sort of thing that nothing does that quite like travel, I think. Well, for my wife, like home repairs and fixing appliances and things like that does that for her. That for me is just frustrating. But travel, you know, is one of the ways that I just love doing that. I love being immersed in other cultures, coming back, knowing more about it than I did when I went. The food, you know, can be a big part of that as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just think of we did a family trip to Japan, and we went to a neighborhood gyozo restaurant. So where you could get, you know, cheap, good food. And it was too big to fit at the table. And there were too many of us, you know, they couldn't fit four of us at this little tiny table. And so I'm over here at the counter so that the rest of my family can sit by, you know, together as a group. And I'm ordering from a menu that is, you know, entirely in Japanese, of which I speak none. And, you know, figuring out from pictures and charades and trying to have a conversation with somebody who doesn't speak Japanese. And I'm just in my element. I've just got this stupid grin on my face. It was right. Our first night in the country. And it's just, for me, you know, just so fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think one of the things that we've always talked about, too, is the meeting people. And, you know, in a world sure. that is completely different than yours, having food and truly experiencing the culture, to me, it makes you realize how small the world is and how you're so alike to other people with like what you want to do with your life and, you know, what's important to you. And you're just separated by distance. You know, it's kind of one of those things. That's, it's really kind of inspiring to kind of see and meet people. And we still have friends that we communicate now from all over the world that we've met over the last 10 years. And it's pretty very amazing. Cool.
Yeah, well, plus it opens your eyes. It breaks down some, for lack of a better word, prejudices and different things just because right. you see right. people acting in different manners or whatever and that it's fine and they do great and they, you know, thrive in those situations. So just makes you, I guess, more well-rounded for yep. a cliche. That right. I didn't want to be cliche, but...
Yeah, and, you know, I've had times I've been ripped off traveling, sure. but I've also had those kindness of strangers kind of moments. Mm-hmm. Those moments. I just told about one recently. We did a show on Oaxaca, Mexico. Actually, I guess we haven't released that show yet, so that's one that's coming out soon. And that was one of those places that we talked about on the show, and I thought, I've got to get there. And so I did. I went down to Oaxaca, my first real trip to Mexico after being to Mexico 15 times in Tijuana. Right. You know, went to Mexico City and Oaxaca, you know, diving into cultures that you're meeting people that their ancestors have been in Oaxaca for 2,500 years or so. You know, they still speak Zapotec at home instead of Spanish. And I was... in the Zocalo, I was in the main plaza, and somebody sat down next to me and struck up a conversation in, I think, a combination of English and Spanish, mostly English. And he was a local weaver, so he was carrying on the Zapotec traditions for weaving and invited me to come out to his studio and see his weaving because, you know, he wants to sell his carpets, but he also offered to be a tour guide for the day. And so he took me out of town and, you know, took me to one of the Zapotec ruins there and to the market and went to the big tree. You'll know if you've been there what I'm talking about. And then we went to his studio and he showed me things like how to make the natural dye, that they make the red dye by crushing the cochineal, which is a bug you find on cactus. And he's like a fifth generation weaver. And there's a couple videos up on my site of this interaction with him, you know, him teaching me how these things work. It was just just great. Mm-hmm. And, you know, basically gave me his day. Obviously, he was hoping to sell some rugs or to get some word out about his business. I mean, those are things that are the same everywhere.
Right.
You know, people want to feed their kids and mm-hmm. make their kids' lives better than theirs. Those are, you know, universal sort of things. But it was just a fascinating day.
That sounds awesome.
Well, and obviously we've been sort of talking about bucket list trips, and from your site, you've done a lot of them, but which ones stand out? I mean, you've been to the pyramids and the Great Wall of China and Petra and Jordan and all these fantastic places. Does any of those stand out? Yes. And all of them would be great, all but any stand
right.
Yeah. I can imagine.
Well, you named two of my favorite trips ever, which would be, well, now I feel like I'm going to slight China by saying this because that was also a great trip. But you mentioned Jordan, for instance, and Petra is amazing. And if you've watched Indiana Jones and the Temple of mm-hmm. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, the third movie, you've seen Petra, this city that they go into that's carved in the stone. Of course, once they go inside, that's all fake, and that has nothing to do with Petra. In fact, there is no inside for that building. They go inside the treasury. But it is, for a lot of people, that's the only picture they've ever seen of Petra. It's a huge complex, and it's, you know, stunning history. But the rest of Jordan is what I didn't expect. The rest of Jordan, where you're, you know, standing in Crusader castles from both sides of the Crusades, where you're, you know, swimming the Red Sea. Although, here's a tip for you. We did canyoneering, on the Wadi Mujib, I want to say, and I'm doing this from memory. So right near the Dead Sea, where you're working your way up a river, you're hiking through the river, kind of like doing the Virgin Narrows in Zion National Park in the U.S. And you're pulling yourself up on ropes, sometimes up through the current and things like that. Just great fun, good adventure, travel sort mm-hmm. of thing. But we did that, and then we went and swam in the Dead Sea. Well, the one thing you don't do when you're swimming in the Dead Sea is you don't shave your legs, for instance, if you're a woman or if you're a guy, because you don't want a lot of little small cuts. And, you know, canyoneering is a great way to get a lot of little small cuts. You don't do them in that order. But, you know, that experience of going there, went to the baptism site of Jesus, actually went there with the Pope, which is a whole nother story, because the tourism board asked me if I would be a photojournalist for a day covering the Pope's visit to Jordan.
Wow.
Most people don't get to do that.
No. You truly are the only one that I know.
Went to these Roman ruins up in Jerash, which are these, you know, substantial, huge Roman ruins. We were there a little later in the tourism season. It was, I think there were five or six of us in the whole place. You know, if we'd been there in the middle of the tourism season, it would have been packed. It was just a fascinating trip. You know, good food, good people, wonderful experience. Egypt, though, stands out just because, as a history buff, you know, when you're standing at the Great Pyramid and your guide, who's an Egyptologist, is talking about, well, you know, these were built back in the Old Kingdom, right, versus the New Kingdom, which was like a whole long time ago. Mm-hmm. New Kingdom is like 2,500 years ago or something like that. The Old Kingdom is, you know, that's the old one. And they were built so long ago that the Old Kingdom fell because the sea people came in. We don't know who they were. We've lost to history who this people is that came in and took over Egypt for a while. But we do know that they had an unfair advantage because they had the wheel.
You're going, wow.
Hang on a second.
That dates things.
Could you back up a little here?
So you're saying
all this was built before the wheel. It's like, yeah, we didn't have carts with wheels. We didn't have chariots, which was what the sea people we think had. It's like,
so on top of
are
the,
you kidding me?
Right. So on crazy, top man. Of the pyramids being an incredible build for their time, they didn't have a wheel when they were building these.
That is what they told me.
Wow.
That even makes sense.
They
may it
have
more
had
crazy.
Logs or things that they could put
right.
things on,
yeah.
but they didn't have carts with wheels. Is what the current thinking was. You know, all of these things they tell you this as if it is fact. It's sort of like, it's what we think.
It's an interpretation.
Right. So I imagine
it's
when
an
they
interpretation
finish.
Based on what was left. But you know, they do have a lot of written records in this yeah. case, and they have, you know, cracked those written records. So, and you know, you spend a couple weeks in Egypt, you actually learn to recognize, you know, hey, that is the name of Ramses. There's his cartouche on this wall because there are 16 Ramses. So you're going to see that one right. again and again.
Right.
So that's Ra, oh, that's the sun. Okay. That's the one that starts with the sun at the top and whatever. So, you know, they do understand those, they think, at this point. So we do know a lot about that civilization for something that happened a long, long time ago.
Wow. When you think about, and today, technological advances are happening every day. Obviously, you know that being in the tech industry. But and you know, especially ones that come out that really, you know, advance us, or we think it really advances us. Can you imagine the wheel coming along, what that was? And no wonder that the sea people were able to, you know, take over the old Egyptians. But it's just amazing. Well,
and whether it was the wheel or chariots per se as a weapon of war, you know, either way, you know, you got to give credit to the ancient Egyptians because they invented beer. So, you know, I know you guys are a fan of that. So.
Yes, we are. Absolutely. Well, those are certainly some great trips, and both of those are on my bucket list. I haven't been to Egypt yet to see the pyramids, and Petra is definitely on there. Yeah. That just looks amazing.
Well, and if you do go, I would encourage the normal trip, the regular trip. You also get down to this is going to sound odd, down to Upper Egypt, because Upper Egypt is up the Nile River, which is south. So you're going down the map, but up to Upper Egypt. That is worthwhile getting to Luxor, worthwhile getting to Aswan and some, you know, some of the ruins that are around there, like Abu Simbel and places down there are amazing. And then you also see some of the Nubian culture. We went to a Nubian village there. And that, of course, is the dark or the black Egyptians, a beautiful people. So, you know, doing that whole sort of typical trip, there's a reason why that became the typical trip. It's Egypt is more than just Cairo, and Cairo is amazing. And also, you know, chaotic and intimidating and all of those sorts of things as well.
Yeah. Did you, venture south of, the Nile?
So we went south as far as the dam.
Okay.
So that's, a day flight down, and then we took a boat back up to Luxor.
Okay.
So not all the way back up, but a two-three day cruise.
Okay.
You know, seeing things along the way.
Nice.
Yeah. No, that's great.
Very, very typical sort of itinerary that you can see in Egypt.
So, interesting. Yeah.
Versus the one I tried to talk my wife into, which is, hey, Joan, look, here's this one that's really cheap where you get to sleep on the deck of a felucca. You know, these sailing boats on the Nile.
Feel like
not so much her speed.
needing Moses to part the sea.
Right.
I don't know why. You know, sounded like a great adventure.
Yeah. I did notice two on your bucket list there we can help with. We're about 10 minutes from the Antietam battlefield, 10-minute drive where we are.
Okay.
Yeah, and Camden.
You're right by my daughter, so I have no excuse for not getting to some of those. She's over there in Vienna, so.
Okay. Oh, well, there you go. I was just going to mention Camden Yards as well, so.
Yeah,
We're in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, which is right on the banks of the Potomac, and like Brian said, a 5-10-minute ride to Sharpsburg and Antietam, so.
Yeah,
a lot of history here, too, but obviously the big battlefield's just across the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, our town is the oldest town in West Virginia, and it was really a hospital during the war.
Mm-hmm. Hospital so, town.
Yeah. The whole town turned into a giant hospital.
It did just get to Harper's Ferry last time
right
I
up
was
the river.
Back.
Yep.
Staying here, yeah.
Yeah, we're 10 minutes from there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Neat.
Been in the area. Went to one of the brew pubs there on the bluffs overlooking Harper's Ferry.
Yeah, Harper's Ferry Brewing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so you've been there recently.
I'm not a beer drinker, but I was with a bunch of beer drinkers. So, you know.
Yeah. Did you get hike up onto the
Maryland Heights?
We did not. It was we didn't do a lot when we were there. We did some other hiking when we were down there and down in the Shenandoah.
Okay. Well, whenever you get back to Harper's Ferry, make sure you, as a photographer and somebody who loves views, you're gonna love that view. It's one of the best. Yeah, it really is one of the best.
Well, and that's the thing, we talk about travel, you know, I think a lot of Americans have missed how many great spots there are in the U.S. You know, to say that I had only been to two countries doesn't mean I was not well traveled or that I hadn't been to some world-class sites. You know, honestly, for instance, when I was in Iceland, you go to Geyser, after which all other geysers get their name. And if you've been to Yellowstone, you go to Geyser and you go, eh, schmeh.
Yeah. Right.
Because I think 60% of the world's geysers are in Yellowstone National Park.
Wow.
So, you know, Geyser is cool if you've never seen a geyser. It's nice. It's great. But it doesn't compare to Yellowstone.
Right.
You know,
they dwarf those.
You know, I've been to the Grand Canyon of in a couple different places, but it's like, yeah, no.
Yeah, right.
I understand what you're saying.
That's, you know, not grand.
It's lovely.
Yeah. You
know, a lovely little canyon. Here. Right. I remember being down in the Blue Mountains in Australia, you know, and you go down to see the Three Sisters, this formation here of three pillars of rock. And it's like, it's lovely. But if you've been to Bryce Canyon, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, it's not the same. It's, you know, and if you've had a chance to hike down into the Hoodoos in Bryce, on one of my favorite hikes in the U.S., which is the Navajo Trail in Bryce Canyon, you know, which my wife didn't appreciate as much. She said the views were just as good from the top. Yeah, I'll give her that. But it's an experience. You get to hike down into the Hoodoos, you know, or hike up the Virgin Narrows in Zion National Park. There are some amazing travel opportunities you can have, even in a year like this year where they won't let you leave the country or won't let you come into, you know, other countries. This country has some pretty amazing travel opportunities as well. So you don't have to necessarily even go international to get some great traveling.
I agree. I think we take our own country for granted sometimes. And you're right, there's just a ton of stuff here, but it just seems more exciting to be going somewhere out of the country. But there's equally, whether it's beauty or historical sites or whatever, just a lot of things to do.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Well, on your to-do bucket list, I know we hit a couple here with Antietam and that type of stuff. But
right, yeah.
What is the top one that you want to get to, or that would be next, or you're just can't wait to do?
Well, so the only trip that I haven't that isn't currently canceled that I was going to do this year, which included you know, the Canadian Arctic and Greenland and Turkey and Italy and some other trips that I can't think of. My trip to Galapagos in December is still scheduled.
Nice.
We'll see, you know, whether they cancel it, whether we cancel it, but we have been invited to go down to the Galapagos to go on a cruise out into the Galapagos Islands. And that is not just at the top of my list chronologically, but, you know, that has been a place that we've been trying to get to for a while, or hoping to get to for a while. But there's just so many places. So
yeah, no, that sounds incredible. So is Ecuador, are you able, because you'd have to go to Ecuador first and then catch the cruise from there, correct?
You have to go to Quito first, right, and cruise out from there.
And are they currently open to Americans coming there now?
I haven't even checked yet, because it doesn't really matter what things are like. And, you know, it's a December trip, and you know, what was it, around, you know, the 4th of July, we're thinking how great things seemed like they were getting, you know, out here in California, for instance. We were thinking, oh, you know, things seem to be good. We'll maybe get down to double digit or single digit numbers a couple of times that we hit in terms of new cases of coronavirus. And, you know, and then we went up to 300 a day in just my county. Yeah. So it's, December is a long way from
right. No, well, that's true. Now, what's sort of your itinerary there? Because I know I'm interested in trying to get a trip like that going.
Fly down, get on the boat, do what they tell me to do.
Gotcha.
That's somewhat true when you do these small boat adventure cruises. You don't know the fixed itinerary of what islands you will go to at the big... I mean, even if they told you at the beginning of the trip, it changes because of weather. Weather and wind. And when I was on cruise, for instance, they say they change for weather, whim, and wildlife, you know, because, you know, when you're cruising along and we're planning on going over this way, oh, you know, now we're cruising next to blue whales. You do that for half an hour until they go away, because that is the kind of experience that you're down there for. And Galapagos, I believe, is a similar sort of experience where we think we're going to get to these islands, but something could come up.
Gotcha. So. And what is it like a 4 or 5 hour cruise from mainland Ecuador out to the Galapagos?
I don't remember. I think I knew that at one time, but I don't remember the answer to that question. Hmm. Yeah, I might even be all overnight, but it's not that far out, as I recall.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You're not burning a whole day to get out there, as I recall.
I know. I was just reading here. only a few weeks ago.
And in fact,
ago.
You might fly out and start from there. I don't even remember right. the itinerary for this one.
I knew there was options to fly, but most of them is by cruise out there. But I know I was reading a few weeks ago where the Ecuador government was in a big dispute with China over Chinese fishermen flooding the area right outside there.
So I saw that.
I don't know if they've gotten that worked out, and I haven't seen anything since then, but I know it was a big to-do there for a little bit. Apparently, they do it on a yearly basis.
I don't think
basis.
That's something you work out in a
no.
Right.
No, not at all, but just interesting. Caught my eye just because it was Galapagos.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, I saw that story.
Do you have any, Chris, do you have anything significantly planned so far for next year in hopes that all this craziness goes away and we're free to travel?
Well, I know that I will immediately pitch the Adventure Canada, for instance, if they open up the Canadian Arctic and that Greenland trip. I tried to get on that. Well, they invited me on that trip last year, and I had just started a new job. So I had spent 6 years prior to that working part-time, and that gave me an opportunity for doing a lot more travel than I have here over the last year and a half. But, of course, you know, this hasn't been a bad year to have a full-time job.
Right.
So, and because we weren't going to be traveling anyway. But I had to turn down a trip, you know, to Greenland in the Arctic. So I will pitch them again next year if that opens up again. It was closed down. Almost one of the first things that happened is the Canadian government said, we're not going to let any boats at all go this year to the Canadian Arctic because we want to protect the indigenous people.
Oh, okay.
Because they just don't have the medical facilities.
Right,
to,
right.
And they're isolated. So, you know, as long as they're isolated, let's see if we can keep them healthy and isolated.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah, that absolutely. Makes sense.
Talk about your social distancing. So.
That truly is the definition, right?
So that's definitely one of the ones I will pitch again, and hopefully we'll get that trip in. And then two of us met at the TBEX conference in Montana. Because I do the speed networking for that, Rick flies me to wherever the conference is, and I've missed only one conference, and they're planning on doing three or four next year, so that could impact my travel schedule. So I was planning on being in Sicily, for instance, when that when Italy closed down. It was only a week before that they canceled the conference that was going to be in Cortona, Sicily. Sicily's definitely been on my list. Again, ever since we did an episode on Sicily, I wanted to get there. So I would love to get that trip in as well.
Now,
but,
have they set
we'll
the
see.
Dates for that one? Is that in March again, or are the dates still
No,
waiting?
I don't think. I think they're still playing things by ear a bit. So I haven't seen dates for the European one yet.
Gotcha.
But
we might have to check that out because we're exploring that whole purchase a dollar home somewhere in that general area. So we might
Okay.
We might do the whole T-Bex Sicily trip and then spend a couple extra days.
Go down to the Puglia or something like
that. Yeah, just kind of explore around because we haven't been there either. So I'm not sure if it's a place that I'd want to have a little house or not, but why not explore?
Yeah. Do the tour. Check
yeah,
it out.
Yeah, well, I haven't been to the southern half of Italy. I think that I've been to Rome and north. Well, and you know what they say with Italy is if you go to Rome and you find it too chaotic, then head north. And if you love the love of life and the zest and the chaos and things like that, then you head south.
It's a good rule of thumb.
Maybe I'll go south first and then go north. Because usually I need a rest after I've loved the chaos, right?
Yeah, you get to Milan, they're practically German, you know, the trains run on time and things up there. And well, they, you know, literally in the northern part of Italy, the Lombards settled, the Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it is a different, the people look different, things run differently, it's more prosperous. The southern part of Italy has always been more poor, more agricultural, and more of the people who we know who are Italian descent came from the south because they didn't have quite the opportunities down there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, a lot of the food that we know, a lot of the, you know, this is what Italian looks like, that's more southern Italy up to Rome.
Interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know that actually.
No, I didn't either. It's funny how history plays a role in all that.
Absolutely.
You just don't think about it. Just you accept things just because that's what you see every day.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I
again, a completely different note. That's the same thing I found though with Mexico. Like as a born and growing up in the 80s and in the United States, you know what I thought Mexican food? Okay. That's not Mexican food. That's the American version of Mexican food.
Most Mexican food we know is Tex-Mex or is American Mexican. It depends. Depends where you go and what region you're in. You know,
well, being
in California,
from the Mid-Atlantic, Mid-Atlantic people, we don't know what Mexican food is.
Oh, you guys don't.
So
I grew up in California, and I grew up in a city that was 50% Hispanic. You know, and talk about your cultural bubble. I didn't have real Mexican food. I had, you know, the tacos in the school lunch, but I didn't have real Mexican food until I was out of high school. And a friend whose last name is Ortiz, who, you know, was Mexican, who did the Machachinas, the Mexican dances and things like that. His uncle owned a Mexican restaurant in Carmel Valley, and we went there, and I was like, oh my gosh, why have you been hiding this from me? But my parents didn't know Mexican food.
Yeah.
They grew up in the Midwest.
Yeah.
And I, you know, fell in love with it and then moved to upstate New York. I had nothing at the time. But there's a lot more. There's a lot more now in the U.S. And you can even find it. You're starting to be able to find it in Europe, for instance.
Did we notice that
we
actually
saw a Mexican
in
restaurant in Norway, in Bergen, Norway, that has a sign out front that said so authentic that Donald Trump would build a wall around
it. That's funny.
That is funny. Yeah. Well, we noticed that, again, was that 2 years ago? The we've been to Spain several times, and 2 years ago when we were in Madrid, there was a Mexican restaurant with the frozen, you know, margarita machines and everything. I was like, where are we?
Oh, no. It's like, starting to get out there. It's starting to get out there. So been travel blogger podcaster for 15 years, and you know, have numerous friends who are nomads. And you talk to somebody who's been on the road for 5-10 years, and you know, it's like, what do you miss about the U.S.? I will lay you odds that Mexican food comes up in the conversation.
I can see that.
But that's starting to change,
because that's one of the foods that you don't see worldwide yet. Mm-hmm. Occasionally,
it's one of the foods that deserves to be an international cuisine.
I would agree.
That has taken while, you know, longer to take on, to take off than say Italian or Chinese, for instance.
That's definitely interesting, though.
But I mean, the thing that we don't understand sometimes as Americans, like I remember being in Toledo, Spain, and here's a restaurant, and the specialty in Toledo, Spain, is roast suckling pig. Okay, so you go to this restaurant, and what's the menu? Roast suckling pig. And you go to the restaurant next to it, and what's the menu? Roast suckling pig. And you go to the restaurant next to that, what's the menu? Roast suckling pig. And it's sort of like, you know, you could clean up with a Chinese restaurant here.
No, that's for sure. But you mentioned,
but, you know, we're so used to, you know, I'm in a region where, you know, California doesn't even have a majority ethnicity these days. And so I can go to an Afghan restaurant. I can, you know, I can go up to little Kabul. We have one of the largest Afghan communities. I can go down to southern San Jose, and you know, the city that I'm in, and it's the second largest group of Vietnamese people outside of Vietnam. You know, we're at a what percent Hispanic in the state, but a large percent. So I've got, you know, good Mexican food, good Salvadorian food, you know, not just Mexican food. I can easily get good pho here, you know, I can easily get, you know, decent barbecue. So I'm not used to, you have the same meal every day, but in a lot of regions in the world, that's the way things work. You know, what do you have today? Well, we have today what we had yesterday.
Why would you change? It was good yesterday.
What a silly question.
It was good yesterday.
It'll be good tomorrow too.
So, and you know, I think people diminish the value, the good food scene in the U.S. The U.S., especially in a lot of different places, have a really good food scene that is competitive with food scene anywhere I've seen in the world, predominantly because of the variety. You know, if you talk to somebody from France, they will poo-poo American food absolutely, and, you know, they think it's all chain restaurants and things like that. You know what it is. But there's also, you know, food scenes here in terms of variety that I think rivals what you can find. You can find better pizza in the U.S. than you can in Italy, in my opinion.
I haven't been around Italy.
Depending on your definition
say,
of what better is.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
So
there's definitely good food, though. Thank God.
Yes.
Right. You know, there's a reason why we're all overweight.
Well, I guess we're getting close to the end of our,
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we got to kind of wrap up. So, Chris, honestly, thank you. That was so awesome. It was good to catching up again. And
yeah, lots of great information.
Lovely chatting with you.
Yeah. So, on parting words, what do you think? Are you ready to your first trip? If you had to pick right now, where would you go?
Oh, well, apparently Lass National Park.
Okay. There you go.
So, trips this year, I'm doing more driving.
Okay.
You know, we went down to Monterey and Carmel, which is a world-class destination and also just an hour and a half from us. You know, we'll get up to the wine country in California, again, another world-class destination sometime this year, I suspect. You know, we're going up to one of the national parks. We've got 12 national parks, 10 national parks. I can't quite remember the number in California. I've got now a California blog as well, and I'm focusing on that this year. You know, and I think a lot of people are doing that. They're focusing on the things within driving range from them. As soon as I get on a plane, there's so many places. Right. You know, it depends on who offers me what is the other thing that is the unrealistic part of my life right now. But places that I want to get to, love Europe, huge fan of Europe, all over. I haven't seen as much Eastern Europe as I would like.
Yeah.
And still parts of Central Europe and the Balkans that I don't know. So I want to get back there, but I, you know, on the other hand, I want to get on a barge cruise in Burgundy again, again on a barge cruise. I haven't been to Burgundy, you know, and, I love Africa, Southern Africa, especially, but Eastern Africa, there is something about the place that gets in your blood. I always say you go for the animals and you come back for the people. It's just a phenomenal place. You know, Botswana, just would love to get my wife back there on a safari in the Okavango Delta, for instance. Just amazing, amazing place. And there are places in China, for instance, like, you know, those amazing mountains like you see out of Avatar, basically, you know, down the regions of Guangxi, for instance, that I would love to get to. So many places.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll be able to get there soon.
Absolutely.
Well, so Chris, where can everybody, you know, want to come out and check out your place? Where's your website and how can they reach you?
Amateurtraveler.com.
Awesome. Well, Jim, you want to wrap things up for us?
Sure. Well, once again, thanks, Chris, and the Amateur Traveler. Really appreciate it. Lots of great insights. And for our listeners, obviously you know where to find us at friendsofcarryon.com and at any of the social medias at friendsofcarryon.com. Thanks again, and until next time.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Be sure to join the friends next week for another great discussion. Don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already. You can also find the friends and other content at www.friendsatcarryon.com or check us out on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook by searching Friends at Carry On. Thanks again for joining us, and don't forget to carry on, friends.